Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother Brian Mendez. Welcome to this Class War Betterville podcast episode. I've been thinking a lot about a lot of things. During the second half of last year, I had two very big life-altering experiences happen. I am by far not the only person to have these things happen. But having experienced at least one, I haven't experienced both of them to some extent previously, I know they can alter the psyche. And there were definitely lessons that I combed from them, most of them personal. However, from one of them, I have recently gained sufficient through sufficiently understanding it, I have gained a lesson about societies also. So the two events that I'm talking about, and I'm pretty confident I mentioned them both last year. The first one was the passing away, or the ascension of my elder brother, which occurred in July of 2020. He had been sick for a long time, so his ascension was foreseeable. He had had a stroke, a significant stroke, in 2018, which had left him partially paralyzed and a mirror image of himself. So it was pretty unclear to me that he should have ascended, passed on in 2018, but he stuck around. He held up the process because that's how strong his will was, because of my sister. And so he stuck around until finally his body couldn't take the pressure, and that was what finally gave in. So he passed away. A little bit over 2 months later, I spent a night in the hospital with severe pneumonia or bronchitis, one of the two. And very high blood pressure. The blood pressure came from salt intake. Got rid of the salt, get the blood pressure under control. But it also came from poverty. What do I mean? B being poor, and I don't have to tell many of you this because many of you listening are poor. Being poor is a taxing experience. It's a taxing experience. And when you're poor, you spend a lot of time worrying about life, worrying about the storms in life, trying to avoid as many of them as possible, and trying to enjoy what you can enjoy without giving in to the monotony, to the problems which you see around you, the depression that is always an arm's length away. And through your attempt to enjoy life, eating becomes part of a routine that doesn't just encourage nutrition, but it encourages a mechanism for feeling good. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I have never struggled with my weight. Yes, I am, according to the body index, probably about 30 to 40 pounds overweight. But I always attributed that to just, you know, getting older, body slowing down, things like that. But over the last couple of years, as I've started looking at my health more and more closely, I realized that that's just not the case. My body is responding to the horrific circumstances which it has been placed in. After I left the hospital, I had time to think about a lot of things. And I gave myself permission to think about those things. And what I realized was, as a child, if it wasn't for school lunches and breakfasts, I would have gone hungry. It wasn't because my parents were bad parents. It wasn't because they weren't trying to do right. It was because the system. It was because the system. I've spent a lot of years explaining that system to you, so I will not engage in that here. As I grew older, that food, which back then was not the healthiest, It was a lot of processed food. Sometimes it wasn't, but most of the time it was. That type of food was what drove me. And years later, when the suburban children, their parents could afford to buy fresh food, including meat and what have you, in the impoverished area that I lived in, we had processed food that was cheaper than the fresh stuff. So, I learned to eat like that. That became a way of existing for me. Beyond that, though, I realized also that the stresses which had been building up within me for decades had also contributed to the breakdown of my body. And there's starting to be science that actually backs this up, especially when it comes to black folks. But I think this, and I've heard of some scientific arguments, especially medical arguments. There's a ton of medical research behind this, so this goes to show you the disconnect between the people supposedly running this system and the people who are existing and operating it on the ground level. There is tons of data, medical data, that proves that poverty itself is a disease. And so, over the previous couple of years, I'd say 8 to 9, my body had begun to really degenerate. And because I was, from basically being a young child and throughout my adulthood, I was always in maintenance mode anyway. Not good maintenance mode, just keeping up with what I could keep up with because of poverty. And many poor people understand this. There's a level of strength that you have to consistently persist and try to eke out a living in poverty. So when your body really starts shutting down on you to an extent, I'm not talking like dying, but in a degenerative fashion, you're already in maintenance mode. You are already dealing with 50, 60 different problems all at once. When your body starts showing signs of degeneration, that just goes on the pile. And so, I just maintained what I could maintain until finally the body said, no, you can't maintain this anymore. And I became so sick, I had to pay attention. Over the last 10 months now, almost 10 months actually, I have been working on rehabilitating my body. And though it has not always gone as quickly as I wanted it to, I am starting to bear some fruit from those efforts. And from this process, I'm learning something. I'm learning something about a society, about a country, about a nation. And ironically, it is a lesson which most people are taught in business. And some people know this from art. And that is, perfection doesn't occur overnight. More, and I think directly connected to what I'm talking about here, is rehabbing does not occur overnight. It just so happens that this sickness occurred, and my rehabilitation from this sickness occurred when there was a lot happening throughout the country, including Biden's first 100 days. Watching how many progressives who I had thought were reasonable, I thought were far-seeing, how they have responded to the problems presented by a mediocre president has made me realize this country's in a lot of trouble, because people are not grasping just how significantly decayed this society is? Or even more pointedly, how significantly degenerated this society is? Everybody wants a quick fix. Everybody wants a quick fix. They just want things to go back to normal. Newsflash. One, there's no normal. Okay? Normal is defined by the society. And two, there is no quick fix for this. You're going to have to spend, unfortunately, time building pressure at the grassroots. And then you're going to have to build the politics with it. And many of these people do not seem to understand that. One of the articles that profoundly, well, not profoundly, but it helped me to understand exactly what my body was going through as it was attempting to regenerate itself, now that I'm actually giving it what it needs. I read this years ago, in fact, and it was explaining how the body is on this 2-year cycle of regeneration. Most people's body go through it. Every 2 months, though, your body kind of goes through a check and says, okay, what's my limits? You know, how far can I go? How far can I not? What do I have in my reserves? What do I need in my reserves? What do I need to prepare for? What time of year is it? Yada, yada, yada. And through that process, your body then gets on the schedule and says, okay, I need to get this done. I need to get that done. I don't have enough for that, so I can't do that, so we'll put that off. And that process really can be clocked. Every 2 months you go through this. And every 2 months, when there's more in the tank than the body needs, as it was, meaning you've given it so much nutrition, so many nutrients, that the body actually, at the cellular level, has stored up energy, the stronger the body tends to get. At least at the cellular level. And everything starts at the cellular level. So, once you've done this cycle 3 or 4 times, the body gets into the rhythm of, okay, I'm actually getting more than I need. This is good. This is good. I'm not struggling. However, if you have many years, let's say a couple of decades of intense poverty, and you have those 3 or 4 cycles where your body's like, man, I have more than I need. The body doesn't jump to, okay, now I can start really doing some good for the body. The body says, where can I store this at? Because I have cellular memory. I know that this is just temporary. We need to have stuff there once when things go bad. And so the body never gets a chance to relax. It's always stressing about lack, even amidst plenty. And that's at a cellular level. Now, if you can break that mentality, and you can break that, you know, through the mind. You can break it with massages and things like that to really break up the body and to release all that tension. And eating foods that promote stresslessness. Then you can start reprogramming the body and start breaking stuff in the body that, you know, has been there for 10 or 20 years. It would take time. You got to go through the emotional withdrawal of all that stress. But it happens. And reading that article and several others, what it basically, one of the points that made that was made was that, look, every 2 months your body goes through this checklist. Every 2 years, your body goes through a major regeneration. And everything that was done in the last 2 years, physically, it is now instilled. That's why it seems to take a little bit of time when you are going and you're doing, you're really changing up what you're eating and stuff like that. That's why it tends to take time, because your body has to go through these cycles. The same thing is true with the society. The same thing is true with a society. The United States is in crisis right now. It has been suffering from a multitude of diseases. It has been suffering from these diseases for a long time. And nobody has done much about them. Now look, after the Great Depression, during the Great Depression actually, the framework was laid to make the society healthy. However, the previous patterns which had been ingrained were not completely uprooted. And since the immediate response to Franklin Delano Roosevelt was to ensure that another Franklin Delano Roosevelt could not exist, therefore shifting the power of the country, and I'm not saying the power should definitely be there, but shifting it entirely to the Congress, because let's be very frank, guys. The power is in the Congress. And many of you would say, well, that's where it should be. Well, the reason why Franklin Delano Roosevelt took the approach that he took was because the power was indeed in the Congress, and the Congress for too long was under the direction of very powerful men who did not care about the public good. So, the Congress, and this was absolutely encouraged by the wealthy, did away with the ability for the American public to elect the president for as many terms as they felt was necessary to get done what they wanted done. However, the Congress did not at the same time say, we need to limit our terms. We can have infinite terms until we die, even if we're not actually doing anything for the people who we are supposedly represent. But the president needs to only have 2 terms. What can you really get done in 8 years? Ask Charles Koch. Is that the one who's still alive? I don't know. They both look like... Anyway. But ask whatever Koch brother is still not shuttled away to the afterlife. What can you really get done in 8 years? Charles Koch has been working for 50 years to do the type of political work that his organization is doing without, you know, encouragement. It's autopiloted now. If Charles Koch only had 8 years to do anything, he'd never get anything done. Ever. But that's exactly why they wanted to take away the idea of somebody being able to run for the presidency for more than 2 times. Now, granted, we probably, because of how big of a country this is, we probably should have a system that's more, I think, like Sweden, where the president is a council, but that's what it is. I'm not going to really dive into any of that today. The U.S. is in the midst of massive degeneration. It is sick. The society is sick. And everybody wants a quick fix.
People do not realize that in order to fix the United States, you have to have a plan. And too many of these groups that are trying to fix what has ailed the United States, they're not getting together to plan. Now, this is a huge mistake. Because, and any doctor knows this, if you're treating a part of the body, typically you have to take into account other aspects of the body. So if you're treating the leg, you still have to worry about blood. You still have to worry about nerves. You have to maybe possibly worry about tendons and stuff like that. Maybe there's an infection in the leg that is threatening to spread to the rest of the body. You have to worry about that. If it does start to spread, okay, how can you stop it? What can you do to ensure that that doesn't impact the internal organs? Any doctor knows this. And sometimes there's three or four or five problems where you need three or four or five doctors. That's why I think this entire idea of universal health care in this country is incredibly telling. Because at the heart of any country is the ability to solve problems. That means heal wounds. And if you can't do that at a cellular level, if you can't heal every person at a cellular level, how the heck are you going to heal a nation at the individual level? How are you going to heal a nation at the familial level? How are you going to do that? You're not. You are not. That's why I feel that this is one of the most important conversations that we are having today. Is the idea that this country needs universal health care, along with true family values. Back to the point, though. The right wing, the nihilist forces within the society, which degenerate societies. You call them regressive sometimes, it's worse than that. These are degenerative properties. Every society has them. They're nihilistic. They're supposed to be there. They're always going to be there. However, if you allow them to get out of hand, they create compounded problems. Just like if you allow an infection to get out of hand, it creates compounded problems. And so, after those problems compile themselves long enough, you start getting decay. Decay is a natural result of degeneration. Your ability to stave off decay by decreasing the amount of degeneration which happens in a given area and thus in your country is important. And so you need all hands on deck to stop those forces, which, if given the means and the time, would take what was a degenerative state and increase it to a decayed state. Many of the organizations that are doing this work are doing it from the standpoint of a specialist who believes so much in their craft that they devalue every other craft which is around theirs. They believe that, yes, they are an ear, nose, and throat specialist, but what does the ear, nose, and throat specialist really need with a gastrologist or a cardiologist or, you know, a neurologist? What do they really need with any of that? They're perfect as they are. No! That's stupid. You become a specialist so that you can contribute your wisdom to those who are specializing in other parts which you do not serve. In this country, we have people who are legal specialists who do really good work with civil liberties. But these same people do not really sometimes understand the sociological implications for the laws which they are talking about, or the psychological implications for the laws that they are talking about. We have people who are engineers and architects who don't talk about redesigning cities and communities, so they are people-oriented and nature-oriented. Now, when these people do talk, they typically are hired by wealthy people. We have psychologists who can understand the human brain and even can theorize about human behavior, but have no idea about the implications of all that on sociology and economics and consumer behavior and things that actually are impacting people's state of living. You have educators who, because they're paid so little, they can't really grow their craft either. And so, I'm sorry, I probably shouldn't even do that in there, but it's sad to me. You know, you have you have people who purport to be monetary and financial specialists who can explain to you the macroeconomic realities of the theory that they're peddling, because most of this stuff is just theory at the macro level. But when it comes to breaking down that macroeconomic lingo to the micro level, particularly how it's going to impact family dynamic, the communal dynamic. Now, this is mass psychology I'm talking about here. This is something that we don't really talk about much in this country anymore, is mass psychology, and how that's going to then impact the regenerative function of the family and have health implications, educational implications. There's an index that I'm completely flummoxing on right now that I can't even remember. That is very important for this, but they can't do that. They can't make those connections. Now, part of that is because of the way that academia has been structured. The book From Higher Aims to Hired Hands may be of use to you. But, actually, come to think about it, most of it has to do with academia, but, and how academia has been changed over the last 40-plus years. But, nonetheless, we're still in the bind that we're in. So, what I'm trying to get at here is that changes need to be made. Guys, women, anybody listening here, especially those who want to help save this country, or at least at the end of this decade, start to build it back from whatever the ashes it's going to have to rise from are, there's a couple of things that you really have to put your mind towards doing. The first one is, for my white brothers and sisters out there, you have to look at your society culturally as it connects to Europe from a psychological and sociological level. You have to get into psychohistory analyses. And you have to understand the values that actually make up this society. You're going to have to become radical in your thinking and revolutionary in your thinking. Both of these things are not wrong. In fact, they're needed because most people have been thinking in nihilistic ways recently. And here I'm talking about the actual definition of the word, not the screwball philosophy, which is in no way connected to the definition of the word. Trust me, look up the definition of nihilist, particularly in the older dictionaries, for a cleaner understanding of what it is. Leave it to a society confused as ever as to what freedom is to completely create a philosophy called nihilism that is not connected at all to what nihilist actually means. Number two, in order to start this regenerative pattern, you're going to have to knock down the walls that academia has created. You're going to have to start doing interdisciplinary studies. You're going to have to start writing books that are not from one author. I'm glad people are smart, but we have enough books by one author. We need collaborative books that stretches the mind. That's what we need. Okay, there's tons of people writing books about tons of things, and some of those books are really, really good. But for God's sakes, we need people who are going to collaboratively analyze from multiple angles what's happening and create solutions that are multidimensional. That's what we need. Number three. We are going to have to realize that until we redefine what politics is, politics will never be the answer. Until, as Chris Hedges keeps asserting, we realize that it's about mass movements, that it's about the people, and that you have to regenerate each individual person. You have to get them out of their hell before you can introduce them to the idea of heaven, because, you know, as is proven in the show Lucifer, hell is just a loop. It's built by your guilt. It's built by your inability to see anything that is outside of that loop. So until you can break that loop, most people ain't going to believe that heaven exists, because hopelessness is a powerful, powerful motivator. Once you give up hope, some of the older priests and stuff used to talk about this, particularly in the black church. Once you give up hope, you're giving up a part of your soul. And it's an important part that you don't know is important until it's gone. And it's hard and difficult to get that back, because what fills it is influences that are addictive. And breaking that is very, very difficult. Number four. We need a health regimen for this country. Now, I'm not talking about a national health regiment like that in 1984. No. I'm talking about a health regiment that serves each individual region in this country, that comes from the region, and that really, for the next 15 to 20 years, starts building structures that revitalize these areas, that bring them back to life at every level, starting with nature. Starting with nature. That's needed. Number five. And this, I think, is going to be very difficult. We need to define ourselves. We have to define what America was once, what it is now, and what it seeks to be, as related to the different groups here, as related to the world and the various groups within the world. What do I mean? America has been an imperialist force before it was even conceived as an independent country. To say that it wasn't is a bald-faced lie. It has always been imperialist. It started as a colonial expansionist project. That's imperialism. Well, that's who the U.S. has always been. Well, going into the very near future, it can't be that anymore. Because if the U.S. continues to be that, my fear is that Mother Nature is gearing up. Well, I'll leave that be. But the U.S. cannot be that anymore. And so, what can the U.S. be and what should it be? Hard questions that need to be asked. Now, yes, the U.S. is no longer going to be top dog in the world. However, the U.S. is in a very good position to still play a significant role in leading the world through the next 50 years, or at least helping to lead the world in the next 50 years. I've always appreciated the fact that the United States of America is called the United States of America, and I look at that name as meaning something very significant. The U.S. is born from Europe. Europe, for most of the United States' existence, has been in a state of constant turmoil because they were fighting each other. Europe, because of this reality, has been a disunited mess. And it continues to be a disunited mess in many instances because they weren't comfortable with taking all of those different cultures and making them into one entity. The U.S., as a product of this disuniting, name of a book, by the way, is remarkable in the fact that it is considered a United States. It is an extension from Europe and a sort of realized dream of what Europe itself sought to be, a United States or a United Front. And it has been a United Front. It has colonized the world based on the idea that we're Europeans and we should colonize the world. The U.S. took that idea of being united and wrote it into its constitution and its creation. On another level, I also think of the United States as a place where the world unites, where the world unites, or the world could unite, hence the United Nations being here. There is no other place on this country, on this planet, which is more diverse than that of the United States. Everybody is here, including the people who were displaced in order to create this country. For that, I'm truthfully sorry, especially for the role that black people played in that. But in order to really live up to the name, we have to really see. And I don't even know, as a professor has said very recently, if there is a we. So maybe I'm talking to a very minor few, but you have to see what united really means at a higher metaphysical level. Because therein is, I think, the destiny of the United States. The United States has been an egotistical country. And now it needs to become a conscious country. Will it be able to do that? I don't know. But it needs to. Finally, and this is not really on the list, I want to say this to my progressive friends. I have told so many people over the last 3-4 years that any attempt at changing this country was going to take 6 to 10 years. Most of them obviously clearly didn't believe me. Most of them obviously clearly did not believe me. They expected Joe Biden and the news media to hop in line. No way. It wasn't going to happen. With that now realized, many are sinking into despair. And they're spinning out because they don't know what to do. The reason they don't know what to do is because they don't understand history. The reason they're sinking into despair is because, and I'm going to be very blunt here, many of them come from middle-class backgrounds where if you complained to the right person, things got taken care of. Black people, we know that that ain't how this system ever worked. You have to build the pressure to get things really done. That's why I said what I said. 6 to 10 years. Starting in 2018. Many progressives have already given up 2022. Many progressives, particularly commentators that I've watched on YouTube, has already given up 2022 to the Republicans. Many liberal commentators have already given up 2022 to Republicans. Oh, because they could just overturn things when they want to. You fools. You know the number of times that I've been told that black folks in the South showed great courage during the Montgomery bus boycott. I'm told this by a lot of white folks. And yet, you don't see the parallels between the Montgomery bus boycott and the attempt of Republicans to steal the elections. Black people were literally living under the cloud of death during the bus boycott. You're telling me that you cannot organize yourselves door to door, organizing people to get them excited about keeping their democracy if the Republicans do indeed try to steal the elections in 2022 by overturning popular wills? That's laziness. That's laziness if you say no. You do not concede a victory because somebody threatens you. You build protective structures to make sure that that threat never reaches you. They're becoming heavy-handed because they've lost. That's the point. They're becoming heavy-handed because they've lost. They see the demographics. They see the demographics. And here I'm not talking about race. I'm talking about age. I'm talking about poll after poll which says that younger people, people under the age of 35, are not liking capitalism. They know what's coming. They know what's coming. I've been waiting for some. The question is, where's your mind at, and do you know what's coming? Thank you guys for listening. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. I am your brother, Brian Mary Deese. Ladies and gentlemen, the end is almost near for this podcast. Reach out to me if you want. I'll talk with you later. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio talk shows and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone.